Good morning. We greet you all in Jesus' name this morning. We bring you greetings from the Winchester congregation. I was thinking about that, this being October. It's been 2 years since we've started having services at Winchester. It's hard to believe it's already been 2 years. How much has changed? How much has life has moved on? I want to take this opportunity to thank you for all that you've done for us. In some ways, it's easy to feel like this is the place where I used to go to church, just like Shirksville, just like, because there's, time moves on and times bring changes. And I want to thank you for all you've done. Thank you for coming to our services. Thank you for contributing to our building fund. And I don't know if you knew this, but your deacon also was sharing your ministerial aid with us. I want to thank you. Thank you all for that. And so, as I said, time moves on, and it's interesting because each church kind of takes, it changes with the different people that make it up. Each church, my dad used to say each church had its own personality, and I didn't know what he meant, but I'm beginning to see what he meant by that. But it's good to be here with you again this morning. For a message this morning, I have an assignment this evening at another congregation, and the topic they gave me was One Life to Live. One Life to Live. I thought about that. Actually kind of a difficult topic to bring because it's personal. It affects each of us and how we live every day. What's your view of that one life? You and I didn't have a choice to be born. God decided that. Back in the Garden of Eden, God created man. Adam didn't have a choice. God created this world. He gave them the choice there whether they would eat the tree or not. Well, they would rebel, and they did, and we live with those consequences. And in our lives, it's the same story. God created us, and we have a choice what we're going to do with that life. A text verse, you could turn to Hebrews 9. Hebrews 9, verse 27, he's talking about the sacrifice that Christ made for us in verse 26 and how Christ died once to do away with the power of sin. In verse 27, he makes this comment, "And it is appointed unto men once to die, but after this, the judgment." And that's what makes this life so sobering, is that we have one chance to get it right. We have one chance to live our life by the way God wants us to, and that's it. There's no second chance. That's hard for me to imagine because I think of life as time, as an unending resource. I mean, this earth has been around 6,000 years. Every morning the sun comes back up. Surely tomorrow morning is going to be just the same. It doesn't change. And so I tend to think of life as, you know, it'll go for a long time. I'm young. I don't have to worry about how it's going to end. And yet when we think about our life in perspective of what time has been, now, as creation, we believe in creation, we believe the earth is around 6,000 years old. If an 80-year lifespan, which Psalms 90 says, the days of our years are 70, and if by reason of strength they be 80 years, yet is their strength labor and sorrow. For it is soon cut off, and we fly away. So I just took the name, the years, 80, because of that verse. And you do 80 years compared to 6,000 years. It's not very long. If you would do it on a piece of paper, you'd have about an eighth-inch dash. I made a little eighth-inch mark on the back of my paper. Can you see that? Probably not very well. Doesn't show up very well. That's how short our life is. This auditorium, I'm going to guess, is about, what, 75 feet front to back. A lifespan would be about 12 inches compared to what time is currently. That's just compared to time. You compare a lifespan to eternity, it doesn't show up. And that's what almost doesn't seem fair. God gives us one lifespan, 80 years, to get it right for all of eternity. Eternity with him or eternity in hell. Such a short amount of time. And that makes it sobering, makes it serious. But it's not unfair because God gave us his word and he showed us how he wants us to live. I did some studying the different things the Bible compares a life to. I'm just going to list these. I'm not going to turn to all these different references. But in 2 Samuel, it says that a life is as water spilled on the ground. If I were to take this cup out, dump it on the ground, there'd be a little puddle there. You would notice it for the rest of the day, but by tomorrow morning, probably wouldn't see it. It'd be gone. Number of verses talk about our life as a shadow. Job, interestingly, refers to his life as a lot of different things. You want to get a perspective of life, just read Job. Talks about the days of an hireling. So it's an 8-hour time period. You come to work, you go home, that's it. It's hired, the hired man. He also talked about his days as a weaver shuttle. It's fast. Life is a wind. It's as the cloud that's consumed and disappears. Job talks about his life as swifter than a post or a messenger. You think of a time of battle. Someone would carry orders as fast as they could run. That's our life. Swift ships, as an eagle that's hastest to the prey. Eagles, when they're diving, can reach incredible speeds, over 100 miles an hour, diving down to snatch that prey. That's our life. It's gone. Our life is as a leaf driven to and fro. That's especially fitting this time of year. See all the leaves falling off the trees. They've only been around for about, 6 months since that leaf was created, and it's gone. And there's lots of leaves. That's our life. It's so insignificant. It's a flower that's cut down, it's wilted. Psalm 39 talks about our days as a handbreadth, just a span across. That's it. All of your days, right there. Psalm 90 talks about our life as a tale that is told. It's an interesting story. I've heard lots of interesting stories in my life. Some I remember better than others, but that's our life. It's just a tale. What is it? Our days are as grass. Isaiah 57 that says that men are just like a moth-eaten garment. Worthless. I don't have any moth-eaten garments in my closet because I don't keep them. We don't hang on to those. And Isaiah says that we fade. Again, he says we fade as a leaf and the wind takes us away. So our life is short when we compare it with eternity. We even compare it with time. Because our life is short, it gives us, that should spur us to action. You can turn to Psalm 39. This is the verse I referenced where David says that our life is as a handbreadth. But I didn't realize the rest of this psalm. I know I've read it, but I didn't realize that this whole psalm is about what life is. Let's read Psalm 39. I said, I will take heed to my ways, that I sin not with my tongue. I will keep my mouth with a bridle while the wicked is before me. I was dumb with silence. I held my peace, even from good, and my sorrow was stirred. My heart was hot within me while I was musing, the fire burned. Then spake I with my tongue, Lord, make me to know mine end, and the measure of my days, what it is, that I may know how frail I am. Behold, thou hast made my days as an handbreadth, and mine age is as nothing before thee. Verily, every man at his best state is altogether vanity. Selah. Surely every man walketh in a vain show. Surely they are disquieted in vain. He heapeth up riches and knoweth not who shall gather them. And now, Lord, what wait I for? My hope is in thee. Deliver me from all my transgressions. Make me not the reproach of the foolish. I was dumb. I opened not my mouth because thou didst it. Remove thy stroke away from me. I am consumed by the blow of thine hand. When wilt When thou with rebukes dost correct man for iniquity, thou makest his beauty to consume away like a moth. Surely every man is vanity. Selah. Hear my prayer, O Lord, and give ear unto my cry. Hold not thy peace at my tears, for I am a stranger with thee, and a sojourner, as all my fathers were. O spare me, that I may recover strength before I go hence and be no more. So the beginning, we see David making this commitment or this resolution that he would be quiet. He would keep his tongue. He said, I will not sin with my mouth. I will bridle my tongue. Even though the wicked are around me, they're talking, and I want to talk, I'll just be quiet. So that's what he says in verse 1. So he says, I did that. Verse 2, I was sitting there. I was with these men. They were there talking away. I kept my word, and I was quiet. In verse 3, he said, it got me thinking. It stirred my heart. My heart was hot within me. I was musing, the fire burned. And he saw what these men were talking about. He saw what they were spending their life, their energy, what they were investing it in. And he says, it was all vanity. In verse 5, he sees how short man's time is. He says, verily man at his best state is what? He's vanity. It's emptiness. At our best, at our prime, we are but vanity, hollowness. Verse 6, every man walks in a vain show. It's emptiness in our own pride, in our own selves. They are disquieted in vain. That one caught my attention because life is stressful. We have lots of things, deadlines we have to meet, things we need to do. But he says they're stressed out over nothing. It's vanity. He heapeth up riches and knoweth not who shall gather them. These men were consumed with getting wealth, making life comfortable. But what was it? It was nothing. It was going to be taken from them. They're going to die. Let it all behind. Then what? Is vanity. So David looks at these things and then looks at his own life and says, I don't want that. Verse 7, and now, Lord, what wait I for? How is my life different? That's emptiness, that's vanity, that's nothing. So what are we here for? He says, I am here to wait on you. My hope is in thee. And then he goes on and gives his cry. He says, deliver me from my transgressions. Purify me. Don't let me be a reproach. In verse 9, he says, I was quiet because you wanted me to be quiet. You wanted to teach me something. In verse 10, he talks about 10 and 11. He talks about the times when we are under the reproach or under the rebuke, the discipline of the Lord, and when God is purifying us. Makes me wonder what David was facing, what he had in mind when he talked about that reproach. But how God can correct us when he needs to. And we can't stand up to God. Verse 11, he says, we're just like a moth. We've seen moths that come to our dusted on lights, and they may be beautiful for a while. It doesn't take long. They're so frail. They disintegrate. There's nothing left to them. That's what man is. And so verse 12, he cries out to God. He says, hear me. He said, I'm but a sojourner here. I'm just passing through. He says, I want you to take me under your wing. I want you to take care of me. And so realizing how short life is causes us to cry out to God. Because we realize that in ourselves, on our own strength, we're nothing. We're emptiness. We're vanity. But what also makes it serious is that this is our one chance to get to know God. If we wait until we're going to die, it's too late. We're all going to face God face to face, and then we'll give an account for how we lived. And if we haven't built that relationship now, we won't have that relationship when we stand before him to be judged. Secondly, realizing how brief life is causes us to be careful what we sow. Let's turn to Galatians 6. It's a familiar verse. Galatians 6, verse 7. Be not deceived, God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. He that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. These verses teach a simple truth, that what you plant is what you're going to reap. As humans, we're created in the image of God, and one thing that we can do that I don't believe animals can do, is that we can step back from our lives. We can look at this past week. We can see how we've lived. We can look at our relationships with those around us. We can look at our lifestyle. We can look at our habits. We can take our life on one side, and we can line it up with the Word of God. And we can say, what have I been sowing? And here again, I'm looking at this as a young man. I feel I'm still sowing. There comes a point where we begin to have the reaping. And time of sowing is over. So here again, this is even more limited than just our lifespan. But we have this time of sowing. Am I sowing to the flesh? We could go back up to Galatians 5, where he talks about the works of the flesh, verse 19. Now the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these: adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, variance, emulations, wrath, strife, seditions, heresies, envyings, murders, drunkenness, revelings, and such like. So those are the works of the flesh. Those are the things that come natural to us. But we know that if we sow to those things, if we do those things, we will reap. What does he say we'll reap? Corruption, death, a rotted corpse. That's what we will reap if we sow to the flesh. On the other hand, we can sow to the Spirit. This is the opposite. This is the Spirit filling our lives and controlling our lives. And he lists these things in Galatians 5, verse 22. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law, and they that are Christ have crucified the flesh with the affections and the lusts. So we can sow to the Spirit. We can crucify what we want to do, and we can sow, we can follow the Spirit in our lives. And he says there's a reaping for that as well. The reaping for that is, down to verse 8 again in chapter 6, is life everlasting. And so we can look at our lives. We can compare it with these verses. What are you sowing to this past week? What did you sow to? What did I sow to? What is controlling my life? Is it the flesh or is it the Spirit? Because there is coming a reaping. Life is not always going to be exactly like it is today. Time moves on. And we will reap what we sow. And I think that's why he adds verse 9. After saying that we should sow to the Spirit because we'll reap life everlasting, he says, and let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. It's easy to get bogged down. It seems like in this cursed world, the devil has the upper hand. It's hard to see that Christ will triumph. But he says, continue to sow to the Spirit, and you will reap life everlasting. Hosea chapter 10, verse 12 says, sow to yourselves in righteousness, reap in mercy. Break up your fallow ground, for it is time to seek the Lord, till he come and rain righteousness upon you. You have plowed wickedness, you have reaped iniquity, you have eaten the fruit of lies, because thou didst trust in thy way, in the multitude of mighty men. And this was a time when judgment was about to fall on the children of Israel, because they had sowed wickedness, and the time of reaping was coming. The same is true in my life. Same is true in your life. We have a time of sowing, then we have a time of reaping. And this is serious. Moving on to the next point, number three, the shortness of time causes us to live differently than our neighbors. Let's turn to Romans 13. The world around us also believes they have only one life. Some of them may believe in reincarnation, but not most of them. Most of them believe, I have one chance. I have one life, so let's make it worthwhile. Let's have fun. That's why we have pleasure-seeking, the thrills, the decadence in society around us, because that's our one chance. It's our one chance to have fun. Let's read Romans 13, start at verse 11. And that, knowing the time, that now it is high time to awake out of sleep. For now is our salvation nearer than when we believed. The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness. Let us put on the armor of light. Let us walk honestly, as in the day, not in rioting and drunkenness, not in chambering and wantonness, not in strife and envying. But put ye on the Lord Jesus Christ, and make not provision for the flesh to fulfill the lusts thereof. I want to make these two lists side by side on the board. First of all, he says, life is about done. The night is far spent. He says, we're nearing the end. So, cast off the works of darkness, and he goes on and lists those. And he says, put on the armor of God. What's the armor of God from Ephesians 5? You can turn there if you need to. But let's just go ahead and make a list of those. I'm sorry, it's Ephesians 6, not Ephesians 5. Just go ahead, let's turn over to Ephesians 6. Ephesians 6, what is the armor of God? Down in verse 13 and 14.
Are we starting at the head or are we starting? I was just going to go
in the order that they show up, which is actually verse 14. He talks with what's the first thing he mentions? Okay, with the belt of truth. Okay. Shoes of the gospel of peace.
Shield of faith.
Shield of faith. Sword of the Spirit. And then we have prayer after that, which I'll just add that to this list. Verse 18. He doesn't give that a physical analogy, but I believe that's a very important part of this armor is prayer. So these are the things that he says we're to put on, back to Romans 13. He says, let us put on the armor of light. That's the Christian. That's the commandment for us. Let us, verse 13, let us walk honestly.
Why that for this list?
So that's the one side. That's what he says. That's what Paul is calling us to live. Because life is short, because your time is limited, he says, put this on. Live this way. Now, what are the things he lists that the world does?
Okay, rioting.
When I think of rioting, I always think of the riots in the streets, like what's happening in the Middle East when they were overthrowing their dictators. You have people burning buildings, looting stores. That's not what this rioting means. It might have a similar connection, but if you look at the word rioting, I'll just read to you what the Strong says. A nocturnal and riotous procession of half-drunken and frolicsome fellows who after supper parade through the streets with torches and music. Hence, used generally of feasts and drinking parties that are protracted till late at night and indulge in revelry. That's what the word rioting means. Partying all night long. That's the world. That's what they live for. You and I know people like that. They live for the weekend. We get through the week, so we make a little bit of money, get to the weekend, we can party it up. Sounds like America today. I believe Rome mustn't have been all that much different than what we see in society around us. Okay? That was the first one. What's the next one that Paul mentions?
Drunkenness. Right along with rioting, living it up.
And then we have chambering. That's simply a nice way of saying loose sexual morals. Do whatever you want. Do whatever feels good. How much fun is it to commit adultery or fornication? You only have one chance to find out, but the devil tells us. Because next life is either hell or heaven. There's no sin in heaven, and it's torment in hell. So that's why the world says, do it now. Live it up. You only have one chance. You're only young once. You only get one chance to have fun. Okay?
Next, fourth one.
Wantonness.
Not a word I use very often.
Wantonness is unbridled lust. In some ways, it could be associated with chambering in number three, but I believe this one goes much farther than that. This is simply doing anything you feel like. If I want to eat, I'm going to eat as much as I want, and you're not going to tell me to stop. If I want to drive as fast as I want, if I want to go anywhere I want, if I want to do anything I want, nobody can stop me. It's simply unbridled lust, letting it go. Whatever I want to do right now, that's what we're going to do. The world around us is full of men who are trying to live their life like this. We have drugs, alcohol, gangs, violence. You can't stop me. It's my life. That's out there. What about in here? What about in my heart? I have the right to live my life as I please, right? I can make my own decisions. It's my life. We have teenagers to this to parents, church members to this to the church. We can go down the list of all different places that we run into this wantonness. I want to live my life. I will not be stopped. You will not tell me what to do. Is it my life? We could go back to creation when God created Adam and Eve. God created man for his honor and glory. God didn't create man because he was lonely. God didn't create man as an experiment. God created man because he wanted honor and glory. That's why you exist. That's why I exist, to honor and glorify God. So that's the first thing. Secondly, as redeemed people, we have an obligation to Christ. 1 Corinthians 6, 19 and 20. What? Know ye not that your body is a temple of the Holy Ghost, which is in you, which ye have of God, and ye are not your own? For ye are bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. You don't have the right to do what you want to. You don't have the claim to live your life how you want. God gives us that option. That's what happened in the Garden of Eden. That's what's happening today. But it's still not our right. As Christians, we recognize God's claim and our right to serve him, but it actually goes much deeper. We love Christ because of what he did for us. He came and he died on the cross. Romans 12 says it's simply our reasonable service to give back to Christ, give back to God for what he has done for us. And so, giving up these things on the right-hand side is not a hardship. Our flesh wants that, but our desire is to serve Christ because we love him. And this affects every area of our life. It affects what I do for my job. It affects where I go to have fun. It affects what vehicle I drive. It affects everything. Because this life isn't about me. I'm not the one in charge of this. My life is about God. And he's the one in charge. And I only have one life. Which way am I going to spend it? Is it going to be for me? Is it going to be for God? And when we look at it from the point of eternity, how long eternity is compared to today. Today is so short. Is it worth it? And we think of what we give up. We think of the things that Christians have to suffer. On the way up here, I was listening to some of the stories of the martyrs, people who suffered and died because of their love for Christ. And yet, what is that? So that we could flip this thing around. We could say you can serve yourself now and suffer for eternity. Is it worth it? And we could say you can suffer for Christ now, you can die for Christ now, and live with him for eternity. Is it worth it? Absolutely, it's worth it. Jesus said, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it. If you're going to run your own show and do your own thing, you're going to lose it. It's not going to last. You're going to get to eternity. It's going to be gone. On the other side, he says, whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it. For what does a man profit if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for your soul? Then in Luke 17, after the parable of the servant, Jesus talks about the servant who is out in the field working all day. He comes in from serving, and his master says, "Thou make me supper." And the servant says, you know, he does it because he's the servant. He says that we are the servant. When we get to heaven, we're not going to say, you know, God, it was so hard to serve you. You were so unjust to me. You were so unfair to me. He says, so likewise ye, when ye shall have done all these things which are commanded you, shall say, we are unprofitable servants. We have done what was our duty to do. So the world wants to paint this as a hardship, a life of righteousness, a life of peace, living in faith, following God. They want to say, that's ridiculous. You can't do that. This is where it's at. This is where you need to have, this is what you need to be putting your time into. That's what life is about. Enjoying it. You only have one chance. And yet, when we look at it from God's perspective, it's but a reasonable service. And the irony is that the world, in seeking those things and pursuing those things, finds them always just out of reach. So close to it. It was fun. But you know what? Next weekend is going to be even more fun. And next weekend is going to be even more fun. It's there. But they can't quite get it. On the other hand, when we serve God, when we serve Christ, that fulfillment is there. What the world promises to give us is what we get when we give up what the world offers. It's a beautiful picture when we follow God. In closing, let's go to Luke 19. Luke 19 is the parable of the pounds. This parable is similar to the parable of the talents. It's not the same. In the parable of talents, we have the Lord leaving, giving his servants different number of talents, 1 5, 1 3, and 1 1. And they're supposed to use those things for his honor and his glory, but they're rewarded according to what they've done. See if I can get back on track here. But they're rewarded according to how they've used those talents that he's given them. This story is different. Each servant receives the same amount. The Lord leaves, he gives each of his servants 1 pound. Let's just read this parable. Luke 19, we'll start reading at verse 12. He said, "Therefore, a certain nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom and to return. He called his 10 servants and delivered them 10 pounds and said unto them, 'Occupy till I come.' But his citizens hated him and sent a message after him, saying, 'We will not have this man to reign over us.' And it came to pass that when he was returned, having received the kingdom, that he commanded these servants to be called unto him to whom he had given the money, that he might know how much every man had gained by trading. Then came the first, saying, 'Lord, thy pound hath gained 10 pounds. And he said unto him, 'Well, thou good servant, because thou hast been faithful in a very little, have thou authority over 10 cities? And the second came, saying, 'Lord, thy pound hath gained 5 pounds. And he said likewise to him, Be thou also over 5 cities. And another came, saying, 'Lord, here is thy pound, which I have kept laid up in a napkin. For I feared thee, because thou art an austere man. Thou takest up where thou layest not down, and reapest that thou didst not sow.' He saith unto him, 'Out of thine own mouth will I judge thee, thou wicked servant. Thou knewest that I was an austere man, taking up that I did not, that I laid not down, and reaping that I did not sow. Wherefore then gavest not thou my money into the bank, that at my coming I might have required mine own with usury? And he said unto them that stood by, 'Take from him the pound, and give it to him that hath 10 pounds. And they said unto him, 'Lord, he hath 10 pounds. For I say unto you, that unto every one which hath shall be given, and from him that hath not, even that which he hath shall be taken away from him. But those mine enemies which would not that I should reign over them, bring hither and slay them before me.'" So we have these 10 servants who are each given a pound. And I think this pound is life. You could also say it could be salvation, the opportunity of salvation. But I think it's life. The Lord is obviously Christ. He was called away to receive his kingdom, and he left us here on this earth, 10 servants. Now 7 of those 10 said, "You have nothing. We don't need to serve you. You have nothing over us. We're going to do our own thing." And they left. It's fine. So that's the 7 servants, and that's the world. That's those who are rejecting Christ, who are turning their backs on him, walking away. But then we have the other 3 servants who say, "This is my Lord's pound. I will use it for his honor and glory." And I believe that is the church. That is you and I this morning, the 3 servants. And each of these 3 use it in different ways. We have the first servant who applies himself wholeheartedly. He throws his energy into it, and when his Lord calls him into account, he has made 10 times the amount. And we have the second servant. I'm not sure why he had only 5 pounds. Why did he only have 5 times and the other one had 10? The story doesn't tell us. I like to let my imagination run. Maybe he didn't try as hard. Maybe he didn't care. Maybe there was excuses. I would like to think that he was serving Christ, but he's not going to go out of his way to make sure he gets the rescue mission. He's not going to go out of his way to make sure he helps out his neighbor when his neighbor's in trouble. He's just going to, I'll take care of myself. Yes, I'm a Christian. I'm not living for the flesh, but I cover my needs first. I don't know. The Bible doesn't say that. I'm putting words in there that aren't in there. So if you disagree with me, you may tell me so. But he only had 5 to give his master. And then we have the last servant who said, I knew you were unjust. I knew you gave this to me and that you're going to expect a lot more from me. And that wasn't fair. And so he said, here's yours. You may have it. He gave him back nothing. He was bitter. He was a hard man. And so he was taken, what he had was taken from him. And I don't know. He's not killed with those who rebelled. So how this is in eternity, I don't know. What's Jesus teaching us by this man who had what he had taken from him? But it is, the lesson is serious, that you and I are each given the choice. We're each given a pound. We can reject Christ. We can be one of the 7 servants. That's the majority of the people who walk away and say, you have nothing, and they will be killed. We can be the 3rd servant who says, Christ is asking too much. It's not worth it. And we'll get to heaven, and we'll get to the judgment, I should say. I don't know if we'll get to heaven. We'll get to judgment. He will take from us what we have. We can be the 2nd servant who invested but wanted to take care of himself. And so he only gave his Lord 5 times. Or we can be like the 1st servant who threw himself heart and soul into the kingdom and so was able to give back to his Lord 10 times what he had given to him in the first place. Which one will you be? Which one will I be? Matthew 25, where Jesus is dividing the sheep from the goats, he talks about the things that the sheep did for him. Feeding the hungry, giving water to the thirsty, and that can be spiritual thirst or it can be physical thirst. Caring for the needs of those around us. Caring for the stranger, clothing the naked. Visiting the sick and in prison. James 1, he says, visit the father and the fatherless and the widow. Taking care of the needs of those around us. And in Malachi 2:15, he mentions that the reason God created husband and wife is because God wants godly children. And that's an opportunity. You think about it. Opportunity that God has given you and I. Of our 70, 80-year lifespan, God only gives us 20, 25 years. We can create workers for his kingdom. We can raise children to take the gospel to the next generation. That is an opportunity. What are you and I going to do with the opportunities that God has brought into our life? Conclusion, I would like to read the poem, The Road Not Taken. This is not a religious poem. I know we often hear it quoted that way. It is not. It's simply talking about opportunities. The opportunities that you're going to face tomorrow. You have a decision. What you're going to do with them. The Road Not Taken. 2 roads diverged in a yellow wood. And sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other as just as fair and having perhaps the better claim because it was grassy and wanted wear. Though, as for that, the passing there had warned them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay, in leaves no step had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day, yet, knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh. Some were ages and ages hence. 2 roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. Let's kneel for prayer.